everybody. My name is Mark Ceffardini. I am here with Yi and Nathan to talk about Road to Vendetta. I got your names right? Is that right?
Yeah,
Ying. Okay, sorry. Okay, I got that totally wrong. My name is Mark with a C. A lot of people get that wrong. But Road to Vendetta, am I saying that right?
Yes.
Okay. How do you say Road to Vendetta in Cantonese?
Actually, we have a different name.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Sa Sao Sei. Sa Sao Sei means killer, number four.
Oh, I like that. I like that even better. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, but the point is, when we, the thing about the English name, killer number four, is like those others movie, like killer, blah, 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 blah. That's why they want to change it. Because yes. The original name is the Road to Vendetta. Even in Chinese, it's okay. kind of sound the same. But for the publicity and the marketing, they think like Sa Sao Sei, which is like Chinese, very straightforward to the Hong Kong market. That's why they go for it. Yeah, this is kind of like cultural differences.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I heard recently that, because I was talking to the guys who did Luger, it's a crime thriller from Spain, and they told me that The Sixth Sense in China was released as He's a Ghost. And that's not fair to the movie.
Yeah, but they actually reveal everything from the name. So that's why, like, but if we just translate Sixth Sense into Chinese, which will make people confused. Because Sixth Sense for Chinese people is like, you got something really good instinct.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not the story about
it. I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah. So that's why they changed the name, which in a bad way.
Yeah.
But I think a Hong Kong title will help. Sounds better. I forgot the Hong Kong title, which is different. Like, okay, in Hong Kong cinema, we have a different title other than those in China and other than those in Taiwan.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually it's different.
Well, Nathan, when did you two first meet each other?
So we met at a party a few years ago, and so this is not my first feature, this is Ying's first feature, but a few years back he told me he's going to shoot his first feature, and I honestly didn't take it seriously, because you meet a friend at a bar and they say they're going to shoot a feature, and you're like, sure.
Yeah. Want to buy some Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. And a few years later, and this movie company hit me up, like, hey, you know this director called Ying? I was like, yeah. I was like, he wants to shoot his first feature and he wants to find you. I was like, really? Like, I was pretty surprised. I mean, pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
And I was even more surprised. I mean, after working with him, you know, it didn't feel like I was working with a first-time director. He had good instincts. He knew what he was doing. And even if he did it, he learned super quick. Like, there was, you know, I worked on a lot of different features before, and this is the first time where I felt like this guy has a really solid career and future ahead of him. And he's got really good taste. Yeah.
And the second time he met me, I thought he's going to end the movie, but he's kind of like to reject me. but the point is, I didn't get that. Like after we shoot the movie, we do the color grading, and we go to a bar and have a drink, and he said like, you know what, the second time I want to see you, I just want to reject you. Uh-huh. Yeah, but at that time I was so naive, I was so exciting because it's green light for the movie. That's why I'm so excited, like explaining.
Well, usually there's a phrase that you have to come 90% of the way to get the other 10%. So what did you have to put up and show as proof of concept or things like that to be able to get?
I think I do like 300%.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a really tough moment in that period to making this movie. It's like from 2019. Until now, it's like 6 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. And like the project almost stopped. Because first, because of the pandemic situation, the producer came in and said like, okay, Ying, we got trouble. Would you like to shoot it in Hong Kong? I was like, nah, I don't want it. And 3 hours, and 3 years of waiting later. And then like, there's a situation like maybe 1.5 years ago, producer said, like, Ying, you might have a preparation that this project may be canceled. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, why? Blah, 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 a lot of reason. And this, the point is, like, we have a hard time to find a production company which is good enough and which is cheap enough to support us to do the shooting in in Japan. Because usually when Hong Kong movie go to overseas shooting, we bring everyone to that place and we hire only the location manager. But this time it's no. We just bring him, the focus puller, and two producer, and that's it. We go there, and 80% of the crew, like 50 people, are Japanese. They barely can speak Japanese. Okay, English. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, that's why like we cannot find those company. I was like, and then the second point is we have to change the location because if we shooting all things in Tokyo, it's so expensive. Someone suggests to shoot in the northern part of Tokyo, but no one know what the hell it is, what the hell it looks like. And then I buy a ticket, I fly myself to that location, and I drive alone for 4 days straight. Like I visit like 10, I mean, 100 of locations, like just by like Google Map. Uh-huh. Yeah, I saw like this place, I want to go in, and then I want to take the pictures. I have like 20 or 30 photos of each location, and I make it in a like project file, and they send him. They was like, oh, the producer said, okay, maybe we can shoot the movie. Yeah.
Well, Nathan, with your experience, what, how did you help craft shots? How did you help kind of frame things? Like, you know, given the limitations we have, or you know, as you mentioned about the first fight on the tram. You know, that was not rented, that was not stopped, you just did that. So were there things that you were like, pulled from your bag of tricks and said, well, based on what we want to achieve, I'd say this, or I've done this, and like, what previous experience did you bring up?
Well, okay, I think one really good thing we had was we had almost, like, we have a really good relationship with the rentals in Hong Kong, and we were able to get all the gear that I'm normally used to having on this low-budget film. Like the top cameras, top lenses, and all the grip stuff that I wanted. So that was like a huge bonus. Okay. But the other thing is, a lot of Hong Kong action films I work on, like Ying mentioned before, is like, it's on the day, no rehearsal, actor comes in, and it's like you do the action and that's it.
Wow.
So it's really hard to get good action from that, whether it's from the camera department, because we're like, oh, we need to do this shot. We don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so this is an opportunity where we're like, okay, we want to make this happen. Like, we literally need to plan every single shot.
Okay.
So we, you know, we pre-vised all the scenes with the action director. We designed all the shots together, so everyone was part of the process. And then we worked with the actors together to do that pre-vis as well. So we were able to, like, craft all these shots in these really short amount of time. And basically, like, we have maybe a day. Sometimes, like, some locations, we had a day to shoot these massive action scenes. But we knew exactly whatever shot was, where the lights are going to be. So it was like a show. Like every day was like a show. So I think
I think the most important thing is I insist like him to come to the previews, and then we work together with the sound director. And I go back home, I do the editing, I add the music and everything, then make sure everything is as we compose and we compromise, and you agree and I agree, and that's it. And on the shooting days, on the rehearsal day, I insist everything is the same as the previous. That's to make sure we can do those good things in low budget.
Well, the most attractive element in my mind is how you mixed cultures. You know, this is similar to, say, something like Rush Hour, or maybe it's Guy Ritchie meets Stephen Chow. You know, that blend of grittiness and aggressiveness and the comedy. But you know, there's a joke in the movie where I think it's the salted fish. It's a gap in translation between cultures. Are there experiences that either of you two had that helped inform something like that?
Oh yeah. You know what? Like, okay, I always love to communicate with foreigners. And they like make jokes out of those like just I want to like how somehow like to play smart, like actually stupid, and people laugh. This is what I am. Like I try to learn Japanese because I have to go to Japan to shoot the movies. Like I watched the movie Oppenheimer. He goes to like Holland to do the lecture. He spent 6 months to get the fluent language to do the lecture there, no one knows. I would say, like, maybe I can try. So I download the apps, and then I learn Japanese like 650 days straight till now. Yeah.
Or I should say, 本当に?
本当. And then I fail, because you cannot learn how to speak Japanese with the app. But yeah. I know the vocabulary.
Okay.
I understand people talking, like maybe 60%. When I read those Japanese, I can understand like 80%. Like those how I, from learning, I know, how, like this kind, this language, this vocabulary, like somehow similar to those Japanese.
Uh-huh.
And then I try and error and talk to my friends and everything, and we find out those jokes. And we talk to the translator. Actually, we have a list of similar like vocabulary that we can use. That's why we pick the most fits into the script.
Gotcha. Well, one of the things that I also appreciate as the older I get, the importance of focus pulling and shot composition. And I think one of my favorite scenes of all time, I don't know if you know it, but it means something to me. It's in Steven Spielberg's Hook. And I only appreciate this as I get older. It's a part where one of the characters in a room dealing with the disappearance of the children, and the police are leaving through the door. One of the characters looks out of a window, and the camera is actually through the window because it's in the room. It pulls out, and it goes across the street, and it stops just to show the scale of the neighborhood. And it's a set, you know. So, and it's very similar to something like Birdman. Or I think it was Park Chan-wook did in the last, it was a Schwarzenegger movie. This thing where it kind of comes off of a building, kind of drops, and it's in the cityscape. But all that said, I wonder, you know, it seems like you guys had so much fun with your movie. What are your takeaways? What are your shots you're so proud of, whether they were planned or not planned?
Oh, that's a hard question.
It's a good question.
I mean... So the one crew member I did bring to Japan was my focus puller, because action focus pulling is really difficult, because I'm moving, the actor's moving, so everything's like a moving part, and unless you really have experience shooting action, it's really hard. But I will say, like, my there's no favorite shot. I mean, I almost love every single scene, like, because every time, even though we planned it, there's some new elements to add to it, whether it's the actor's performance. It's like, wow, like, this light and this thing matches really well. My gaffer in Japan, he doesn't really speak English at all. The only way we communicate was he had a lighting plan, and I was like, yeah, good, bad, and he added so much. Like, even though on set we didn't understand each other, he understood my, like, a little look in my eyes, like, he'll see what I'm looking at, whether it's the light, and he was like, oh, okay, you want to, oh, okay. And that was like, amazing. Like, I mean, that's just how good he was as a gaffer. Like, there was no language that we were still, but I'm proud of the film overall. I don't have a favorite shot yet. I need to think about that.
That's fine, no. Okay. How about you? Something you weren't sure was going to work out, or something you're like, yeah, this is exactly the way I imagined it.
I do the storyboard by myself, actually. And the point is, like, he really stick to the storyboard. We have the PVs for that action scene. But the thing is, we actually have the PVs of the talking scene.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a PVs of the drama scene. And that actually worked out, too. Yeah, because, I don't know... for me, I try so hard to make sure everyone knows what I'm thinking about. Yeah, because when you read the script, okay, a lot of people, the crew member, they read the script, they kind of imagine, like, the outcome is so different than the script.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when the tool we're talking to each other is the videos, PVs, like storyboard, mood board, everything. We make sure that everyone is in the same line.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess you have to be, because otherwise, you know, if there's got to be some planning, because I keep thinking about how chaotic it would be for Danny Boyle,
to do 28 Days Later, where he just goes into Piccadilly Circus in London, like, doesn't tell anybody he's coming, just sets up shoots guerrilla style. And you kind of like, I guess I'm going to get what I'm going to get, because you're making it up as you go. But I think the exciting thing, too, is that if you have a vision and it's strong enough and you share it with people, everybody's going to come together to make it special. And I really enjoyed the film just because of the aspect of, you know, films like this play well at the festival because people appreciate how much passion are in the creatives. I had so much passion in the fight with the UFO catchers in Japan, where the frying pan and throwing the where Kumo's throwing the stuffed animals thinking it's going to help. I know that may not rank super high on your list, but I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I enjoyed that too. Yeah, it's kind of fun. Okay, when you do the action choreograph, we always think that's like, what else can we shoot? Like in, not in a big budget. Okay, you can throw a car bomb, car crash, airplane crash, anything. It's if you have enough money. We don't have money. Like, what can we do? We have only characters. Mm-hmm. So, as you can see, like, different action scene, we have different theme, actually. Mm-hmm. For me, I have a strong dancing background. For me, like, every scene is like a stage performance. Okay, the character come out, what dance piece they make.
Yeah.
Like how the dance piece can express the emotion, or how the dance piece can carry the story on or off.
Yeah.
Or change the story. If there's no change, then why I need the scene?
Yeah.
Just like for each of the punch, well, people like punching. Especially the stunt director, it's like, more punch. I was like, why more punch?
Yeah.
Like why more bullet? Like, for me, like, every bullet means something. We even count the bullet. Like,
oh, really?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, okay, and change. Yeah, because we bring the previous to Hong Kong, the trainer was like, okay, you guys did count the bullet. Like, he count too. Because like, I said, well, I got some cool stuff. Like, I say, okay, let me see. Yeah. Yeah, this is like the profession to the profession thing. Like,
I see.
Yeah, maybe the audience is saying, okay, I saw something. But for us, I think the more detail we make, the more the better outcome we can get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even people who don't know.
Well, the outcome I'm most curious about, because it seems like a logistical issue, is simultaneously my second favorite scene in the whole film. But I'm just curious how you as working the camera, how you made it work. The gun shop scene, I love it for the simplicity that it's kind of like you're selecting what you want based on little tiny toys, but it seemed very dark in there. So I'm curious, did you go in there like, how am I going to get good lighting here? It's like, it kind of claustrophobic and dimly lit. Like, how did that come together?
Well, that place is tiny. Like, literally, I took out the battery of my camera. Everything was like, we ripped off everything we could from the wall, and I was just barely able to get them both in the shop. But I turned off all the lights. Actually, inside is really bright. It's very like a standard bright, you know, shop. But we turned off everything. We just had one bulb where we put our light tubes on there. That's the only way where you create shadow. Like, I can't put lights anywhere. So it's, that was the only light, and we had like a little small LED on the side, and with the theme of the film, we always have red somewhere if it's like something to do with. Yeah, so you always feel like there's a bit of danger whenever you see red, but when, for example, at the school, it's more neutral tones, more warm, and you feel like it's more safe. But whenever with the organization, it's red. But I mean, personally, the whole film was like kept dark, because I really like that kind of tone, and it sets you know, makes it a little more mysterious.
Yeah,
because before shooting, we talking a lot of the color palette, the color theme of the movie, like how color can represent the emotion. Like, as he said, like in the Abandoned School, this connection and love begin. That's why it's like warm tone, the yellow tone. And for the association, the assassin association, we bring a lot of red color.
Okay.
Like, it's a temple with a lot of red color. And we have gold color. Gold color means gold mean money to okay. to us. Yes. But in Hong Kong, we don't see gold because there's not that gorgeous, but we see a lot of red.
Okay.
Yeah, and we see a lot of like blue, which is like coolness, because at that moment, number four is alone and his heart is empty. Yeah, that's why when he go to Japan, everything changed. We have a lot of warm color brings in,
okay.
and yeah, and in the particular scene in the toy shop, like when I look at the color grade after the color grading, I was like, what. It just looked like one kawaii movie. I don't know what you think about like those green and those like greediness, like just looked like one kawaii movie. We didn't mean that like before.
Well, the unexpected humor or the charm of the film, like when the kids go in thinking they're going to get guns, and I don't want to spoil it, but like they're let down. But then also what you said about the red was important too. I didn't pick up on that, but I'm wondering now, both for maybe emphasis, but also comedy. When Boss had his knee, it was like a lot of it to really overemphasize. It was unbelievable. It was a joke, and was that red just because it was blood, or was that actually kind of like fake danger?
Which one?
When Boss was pretending to have skinned his knee.
Oh yeah. He just pretend to be injured. Yeah.
Okay.
And which just happened to be red.
Okay. That's kind of. I wasn't sure of that. But so what's next for the film? Different festivals, sales, anything like that?
Yeah. After this one, I go back to Hong Kong and go straight to China for another festival, Pingyao, the 9th festival, and then we go back to Hong Kong. We have a Asia Film Award in Hong Kong. Yeah, which actually we are the closing. Feature movie.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and after that, we might have another one in China, too.
Okay.
And then we go to show our movie in the cinema on December 4th in Hong Kong.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a couple of film festivals next year, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, a long road for Vendetta. I'm terrible at jokes. Well, Ying, Nathan, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for bringing it to Fantastic Fest. Wish you the best of luck.